Chapter 13. Nancy on London Bridge. One morning, Fagin sat with Noah Claypole at breakfast.
"I want you to do something," said Fagin. "Something that needs a lot of care."
"Don't put me in any danger," replied Noah, "or send me near any police officers."
"There's not the smallest danger in it. It's only to follow a woman and tell me where she goes, who she sees, what she says," said Fagin.
"What will you give me?" asked Noah.
£1 if you do it well," said Fagin.
"Who is she?" asked Noah.
"One of us," said Fagin. "She has found some new friends, and I must know who they are."
"I'm your man," replied Noah. "Where is the woman? Where should I go?"
"I'll tell you when the time is right," said Fagin. "You keep ready and leave the rest to me."
A few days later, Fagin came home, his face bright and excited. It was Sunday.
"She's going out tonight," he said to Noah, "and the man she's afraid of will be out all night. Come with me, quick."
They hurried through the streets and arrived at the Black Dog. Fagin led the way to a small high window that looked onto another room.
"Get up on the table and look through," Fagin whispered to Noah.
"I see her," cried Noah.
He got down quickly from the table as the girl stood up. Fagin pulled Noah behind a curtain as Nancy came out of the room and left the pub. Fagin looked at Noah, and Noah hurried after Nancy. By the light of the street lamps, he could see her, already some way ahead of him. He kept on the opposite side of the street so that he could watch her better. She looked round nervously two or three times, but she seemed to become braver as she got further away. The clocks struck 11:45 p.m. as they reached London Bridge. Nancy looked around her as though searching for something. Noah moved along in the darkest shadows he could find, stopping when she stopped, going on again when she moved. Just as the bell of St. Paul's struck midnight, a carriage stopped on the bridge, and a young lady and a grey-haired gentleman got out. Nancy walked straight towards them. Noah watched from the shadows.
"Not here,"
Nancy said to Mr. Brownlow and Rose in a low voice.
"Come down the steps over here."
"This is far enough," said Mr. Brownlow when they had gone down the steps. "We will not go any further. Many people would not trust you even this far."
"I did not dare to speak to you up there," said Nancy, shaking. "Speak to her kindly," said Rose to Mr. Brownlow. "Poor girl."
"You were not here last week," Mr. Brownlow said to Nancy.
"I couldn't come. Bill wouldn't let me leave the house," replied Nancy.
"He doesn't know you've come out tonight, I hope," said Mr. Brownlow anxiously.
"No,"
replied Nancy.
"Good," said Mr. Brownlow. "Now listen to me. Miss Maley has told me what you told her, and we believe you. We wish to find Monks, but if this isn't possible, you must lead us to Fagin."
"Fagin?"
said Nancy.
"I won't do that. Never. Devil that he is, I'll never do that."
"Why?"
asked Mr. Brownlow.
"Because even if he has led a bad life, so have I. He and Bill have not turned me into the police, and I'll not turn them in either."
"Then give me Monks," said Mr. Brownlow.
In a low whisper, Nancy described the Black Dog and when Monks most often went there.
Then she described Monks. "He's tall and strong, but he has a strange walk, and as he walks he looks over his shoulder, first on one side and then on the other. He's about 28, though he looks much older. His eyes are large and dark, and sometimes he looks wild and bites his lips and even his hands."
At this, Mr. Brownlow jumped, but he said nothing.
"I've only seen him twice, and both times he was wearing a black cloak," continued Nancy. "But on his throat there is..."
"A red mark, like a burn," said Mr. Brownlow.
"You know him?"
cried Nancy in surprise.
"I think I do, from the way you have described him, but we shall see. It may not be the same man," said Mr. Brownlow. "Now, you have been most helpful. What can I do for you in return?"
"Nothing," replied Nancy, and she began to cry. "You can do nothing to help me, sir. I'm past all hope. I hate my old life, but I cannot leave it."
She looked quickly around her.
"I feel very afraid again. I must go home." "Please take this," cried Rose, holding out a purse. "It might help you if you're ever in trouble."
"No," replied Nancy. "I haven't done this for money. And yet I should like something of yours to keep, sweet lady. Not a ring, a handkerchief, perhaps."
"Thank you. Please go now. Good night."
Mr. Brownlow led Rose up the steps and onto the bridge. As they disappeared, Nancy fell to her knees and cried. After a while, she lifted herself off the ground and went up the steps herself. In the shadows, Noah remained still for some minutes. Then, when he was sure Nancy had gone, he came out from his hiding place and hurried to Fagin's house as fast as his legs would carry him. It was nearly 2 hours before first light, the time when all is silent, the time that really may be called the dead of night. Fagin sat covered in an old blanket, a candle burning on the table beside him. Lying fast asleep on the floor near him was Noah Claypole. Fagin sat, busy with his thoughts, watching the candle burn slowly down, sometimes turning to look at Noah sleeping on the floor. He was full of rage that his plan was undone. He hated the girl who had dared to meet with strangers. He did not believe her promise not to turn him into the police, and he felt cruel disappointment that he could not get rid of Sykes. He was afraid of being found out, afraid of death. The rage burned inside him as these thoughts ran through his mind. He sat like this until he heard footsteps in the street.
"At last," he said quietly to himself.
Sykes came in, threw off his coat, and laid a parcel down on the table.
"Take care of that," he said to Fagin. "It's been enough trouble to get."
Fagin picked up the parcel and locked it in the cupboard without speaking. But he did not take his eyes off Sykes for a moment, and then he sat staring at Sykes, his hands shaking.
"What's wrong? Why are you looking at me like that?" cried Sykes.
"I've got something to tell you, Bill," said Fagin, pulling his chair nearer.
"Well, hurry up, or Nancy will think I'm lost," said Sykes.
"Lost?" cried Fagin. "She has decided that already."
For a moment, Sykes looked confused, and then he jumped up and grabbed Fagin's collar.
"Speak," he said, "or I'll kill you. Say what you have to say in plain words, you old devil."
Fagin looked at Noah sleeping on the floor.
"Poor man,"
he said. He's tired, tired after watching her so long.
What do you mean? Asked Sykes.
Fagin did not answer, but called Noah's name and shook him awake.
Tell it again, he said. Tell it so he can hear, he said, pointing at Sykes. Tell him about Nancy. You followed her to London Bridge.
Yes, said Noah sleepily.
And she met two people, a gentleman and a lady, said Fagin.
She did, said Noah.
And she told them about Monks and where we meet and what time he goes there, said Fagin.
That's right, said Noah.
And what did she say about Sykes and about last Sunday? Cried Fagin.
She told them she couldn't come last Sunday because Bill kept her at home, said Noah. She told them he always wanted to know where she was going, so the first time she met the lady, she had to give him laudanum.
The woman is a devil,
shouted Sykes, running to the stairs.
Wait, Bill, let me speak, said Fagin.
Let me go,
shouted Sykes.
Just one word, Bill. You won't be too violent.
Fagin saw the fire in Sykes's eyes.
I mean, said Fagin, not too violent for safety. Be careful, Bill.
Sykes did not answer. He pulled open the door, hurried into the street, and ran without stopping until he reached home. He opened the door quietly, went into the bedroom, locked the door, and pulled a heavy table against it. Then he walked over to the bed. Nancy was lying on the bed, half-dressed. She looked at him with fear.
Get up,
Sykes said to her. Nancy got up and went to open the curtain.
Leave it, said Sykes, pulling her back. There's enough light for what I've got to do.
Bill, said Nancy, why do you look at me like that?
Sykes stared at her for a moment, then pulled her into the middle of the room and covered her mouth with his hand.
Bill,
breathed Nancy, trying to get free of his hand.
I won't scream or cry. Tell me what I've done.
You know what you've done, you devil, said Sykes. You were watched tonight. Every word you said was overheard.
Then for the love of heaven, let me go, as I let you go. I did not turn you in,
said Nancy.
Bill, dear Bill, you cannot have the heart to kill me. Think of everything I've given up for you.
Sykes freed one arm and grabbed his gun. A thought flew through his mind. If he shot it, it would be heard. He brought the gun down twice with all his strength on Nancy's face. She fell to her knees, blood running down her head. Pulling Rose Maylie's white handkerchief from her pocket and holding it up towards heaven, she whispered a prayer. Sykes stepped backwards towards the wall, picked up a heavy stick, and, raising his hand in front of his eyes, he struck her down. Then the murderer escaped with blood on his hands. By noon, he was a wanted man.